What's up, it's Chase Young.
What's up, this is Terry McLaurin.
You're listening to the Washington Football Talk Podcast.
Mitch has a really good idea. We have a really fun interview. We might talk about Wawa, and we got to talk a little bit of scheduling. Let's get this podcast going.
On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field, too, when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
What up, everybody? It's JP Finley, it's Washington Football Talk Podcast, brought to you by Oarsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them, want you to do the exact same thing. You can check them out at oarsmanva.com. 7 locations all over Northern Virginia. They'll take good care of you. Just check them out. They got all sorts of cars, used cars. You can lease a car. Pete might get a new Toyota Corolla. Who knows? It's a wide world out there. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Doing great on this Monday afternoon at 2:22 p.m.
I would concur with Mitch. I saw him play some good golf on Sunday afternoon, and hopefully JP will join us at some point in the near future. But other than that, life's good.
I play a little golf myself. Things are stabilized. And I finally realized the sand trap situation. I was just coming down way too steep. So then I'm just like getting nothing out. Anyway.
I'll tell you what, Pete took a video of me taking a golf swing, and astute listeners commented, asked if we were good enough friends to allow, if Pete was a good enough friend to allow him to take a video. So very funny.
Speaking of good friends, Chuck Honey texted me some drills out of the sand. He said, don't quit the game. It's too much fun. So all's well. We're good.
I'm sure you won't do any of those drills, by the way.
Maybe I've already done them, jerk.
You were never in danger of quitting golf. I know that much.
There's a few other things where I can just drink beer outside for 5 hours. So
go ahead.
Why'd Pete try to drag me about doing drills? That was kind of jerk move, dude.
To be fair, we dragged him for almost choking to death, or not.
For coughing? We definitely dragged him for coughing.
And you dragged me in the interview that's going to come at the end of this podcast about my writing. So I'm in a dragging mood, too.
That is Mitch's joke. I just kind of jumped on board for that
one. Yeah, you set him up. You gave him the lobbed softball. Yeah.
Well, speaking of that interview, we talked with our guy, Steve Wino. We're going to do a kind of in-depth look at each one of the Panthers' opponents this coming year. Who do they play week one?
One of the Commanders' opponents?
You have Panthers on your mind? You just said Panthers' opponents.
Each one of the Panthers.
I was starting with the preseason in my head.
Yes.
There we go.
Dude, we got to go back and listen to see if anybody got a mock preseason schedule right. Because I'm pretty sure I had a trip to KC on mine.
I think you did. Yeah, I can go back and grade it just for our interest. So
I mean, I am wildly interested in that.
Because I know you definitely – we all had Bills trips, so we definitely didn't all hit it.
Yeah, maybe I had Bills.
You were closest.
At KC, but I don't know. Also, real quick, we had Phillips on the radio today. Obviously, going to Richmond's not happening. We would know that by now if it was happening for training camp. But Phillips kind of seemed to rule out joint practices. Couldn't you see joint practices that week in Kansas City? Because you got a home preseason game against Carolina and then a road preseason game, in air quotes, against Baltimore. Like, they're here the entire time. They could swing 3 nights in Kansas City, go out there, practice Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, day off Friday, preseason game Saturday night. I could see that, right?
Yeah, Mitch spent our morning call with some of our editors and stuff talking about how he might expect a Kansas City, Washington joint practice. We know Ron Rivera and Andy Reid really get along. And if you're going to try and improve your team, especially your defense, who better to do it against than the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes? So I would love that for them.
Yeah, the only thing that's odd is Ron actually said, I don't know if it was owners meetings or combine or what, but he said, like, yeah, you know, taking our whole team to Richmond for a week isn't cost effective. And I in my head, like, how many NFL coaches are worried about cost effectiveness? Like, you should just do what's best for your team. But I don't know.
I think they play the Ravens the last preseason game. I think it's first Panthers, then
Panthers, Chiefs, Ravens.
So maybe it makes sense to do it the 3 days before the Ravens, and then there's no taking the whole team on the road except for down the road a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they'd have to stay up in Baltimore, but yeah, it's a lot. I think they should try to be – if they need to be cost-conscious and cost-effective, I get it. These are interesting times, but not on the football side of things. Like, sell more sponsorships or cut more costs somewhere else, not in football.
Right.
Whatever. It's a different conversation because it was an offhanded comment by Ron that maybe we're reading too much into. But, yeah, Baltimore would make sense too. But here's the thing with Baltimore. Baltimore's, like, preseason reputation is a lot different than the rest of the NFL. And maybe that would make joint practices even better. I don't know. But, like, Ron and Andy are like this. Now, Ron and Harbaugh were on the same staff in Philly too. So I imagine they have a good relationship. And certainly if you're worried about cost effectiveness, going to Baltimore is a lot easier than going to Kansas City. I don't really know how that works. So you got to pay for hotels anyway.
Yeah.
Like, own the plane, or I guess they charter those, but
yeah, I guess also coming, I think you're actually right. Coming back from a Kansas City road trip, then spending 1 or 2 days at home and then having to go back on the road for a week to Baltimore. And granted, it's not far on the road, but it's still, like you said, doesn't make a ton of sense. So,
right. Like, you're already flying to Kansas City, no matter
what.
Yeah.
Right.
Fly out a couple of days earlier.
That was my original thing, was I thought Kansas City made the most sense. So we'll see how it goes. I'd be excited about if that happened. And we were forced to spend a couple of days in Kansas City and eat barbecue.
Yeah. Wouldn't be the worst. I can't wait to sit in a parking lot in Kansas City and do a radio show.
Mitch's grand idea was to, I don't know if we ever got to that, because then you said Panthers and we got sidetracked. Mitch's grand idea is to talk to an expert of each of the teams on Washington's schedule. Wino knows the Jaguars about as well as anybody, even though he doesn't cover them. And that's who we got for today's episode.
And we talked a little caps with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Disappointing.
Voila, you know, all the good stuff.
So the only thing I want to talk to before the interview is this scheduling thing. Warren Sharp is obviously really well known for his analytical mind when it comes to the NFL and doing, like, really deep dives into the numbers and kind of seeing angles that perhaps other people don't. And, you know, when we all talked about the schedule last week, the real complaint I thought was a late buy, but they've had buys in the middle of the year for a couple of years. It makes sense to have one later. Warren Sharp's research has revealed 4 of their last 7 games for the Commanders, they will play an opponent that has 10 days rest coming into the game. And they are one of 3 teams that have 4 of those games this year. All of Washington's are late in the season. And then if you look at that in a vacuum, it's like, weird scheduling stuff has to happen. It's a jigsaw puzzle with 32 teams and a million different variations that could come out of it. But the same thing happened last year. And even worse last year. And I don't believe there's any sort of conspiracy theory. I don't think Roger Goodell is like, hey, go in there and mess with their schedule because they're driving me crazy with all this investigation stuff. But I do think there's at least one obvious thing where a division rival has an advantage in the Cowboys, because they're always hosting that Thanksgiving game. And I think they always give the Cowboys the following Thursday game. So it's like, they're able to schedule this thing, whereas the Commanders just, and maybe the Eagles and the Giants can have the same complaint, but it is interesting that the Cowboys, according to Sharp's research, finish with like +8 extra rest days, and Washington's way in the negative column.
Yeah, we use the word advantageous a lot when talking about Washington's schedule and the schedule release pod, and this is probably the biggest drawback of the entire thing, and it wasn't really readily available or obvious when we recorded that last episode. So it's taken the schedule down a peg and sort of my, oh, that's great take to, oh, it's a good schedule. But still, I'd rather have, you know, those rest issues at the end of the year, but be able to open up against Jacksonville and Detroit, have that Houston, Atlanta, New York stretch before the bye, home opener, et cetera. Like, not too bad in terms of travel. Every schedule is pluses and minuses. That's a pretty glaring minus, but I think there's a ton of solid pluses about this set of opponents and dates too. So Commanders fans, I get it, are as paranoid maybe or as skeptical as any group in the NFL when it comes to the league screwing them over. But like you said, JP, we talked to Joe Ferreira, who used to make the schedule. And he said, when you go in that room, you have no real knowledge or you don't have any bias against any team. You're just trying to make a good schedule. And unfortunately it happened this way for the Commanders, but it's an obstacle for them. And every other team has obstacles of their own.
I think if you dig deep enough into any schedule for any team, you'll be able to find something to complain about. And I think this is the biggest nothing burger of anything, because you look at the games that the opposing team has the advantage. It's the Philly game, which is a Monday night game. So Philly has 10 days rest. Washington has 8 days rest. So it's an extra 2 days, not that big of a deal. The next one is the game at the Giants, but then Washington has a bye week and then plays the Giants again. So the Giants have extra time for the first game. Washington has extra time for the second game. Then you can look at Dallas, who plays two straight road games to end the season. Yeah, they get an extra day of rest before they have to fly back out to D.C., but it is the second straight day on the second straight game on the road at the end of a super long, grueling season. Washington ends with two games at home. So, yes, the trip to San Fran in week for the Christmas Eve game might be a tough one, and maybe San Fran has extra rest for that day. Kind of so be it. Washington gets to come home and stay in their own beds for the final two games of the season. I think any schedule you look at, you're going to be able to find some discrepancy like this. I think this is not that big of a deal. And especially when you look at the context of the other games around it, I think it is what it is. And I don't think Commanders fans should complain. And I don't think it's really a slight, it's really that big of a slight at all.
Mitch doesn't want Commanders fans to complain. How about that?
How about that?
One thing about Commanders fans, they're going to complain.
I mean, I'm just throwing on my Rob Lowe NFL hat again and just, I'm just pumping up the league left and right here. But the schedule is, it's a pretty damn good schedule for the team.
I think there's an inherent disadvantage to a division rival, and I think that's a pain in the ass, but I don't believe there's a broader conspiracy. So you want to get to Wino? Is there anything else for us to cover?
No, I think we're all set.
Okay. Let's get to Wino. We'll be back later this week. We need a Detroit guest. So
I got a couple ideas.
I bet you do, big
good,
man.
Because I had zero.
I know one dude that covers the Lions, but we can figure it out. Here comes Wino.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes. There's the life you seek, and then there's the support you need to get there. At SECU, your goals are our goals. From daily banking and financial planning, we're a place where seekers always win. Visit SECUMD.org.
All right. Love bringing in our friend, Mr. Steve Wino. You know Wino as the Associated Press lead hockey writer. He covers the Commanders. He has an alternate Twitter handle called SWino Horses, where he covers all sorts of horse racing. Have you been on the pod before?
I have. I've guested outside FedEx Field and outside the park and just jumped on the mic with Michael Phillips.
Okay. I've known you've done that. And like, we actually text and talk all the time. I just didn't know if we've done like the Zoom official like this. We wanted to bring you on for a number of reasons. I kind of want to do a Caps autopsy and you're sure. The best at doing that. But I think we start at least in name only. Mitch had a good idea. I think it was Mitch to do a preview of like each opponent for the Commanders this coming fall. And you are our Jaguars expert. Congratulations on that job. Carries,
thank you for that.
No money and lots of responsibility, but, what's going on down there? I have a theory on the Jags. You want to hear my theory or no?
Look, this is Doug Peterson taking over for the biggest disaster in franchise history of a franchise that's had a lot of disasters, and Urban Meyer and how horribly that went, that there's almost a worry that Urban Meyer was going to ruin Trevor Lawrence, because you've got this generational quarterback, a guy who's supposed to be the next Peyton Manning and has all the tools, and you bring in the worst possible coach for the situation. And just no offensive line, complete disaster. You win two games all year. You draft first overall again, But you always say there's brighter days ahead because it can't get much worse, right? From what the Jaguars were under Urban Meyer. And Doug Peterson's got a Super Bowl ring from the Eagles. He kind of knows what he's doing. The team's still pretty bad, but you have to imagine 2-3 years from now, they could be competitive again. This is a team that's lost 10 games each season, 10 out of the last 11 years. The year they didn't, they went to the AFC title game and were leading the Patriots in the fourth quarter of that title game, and Doug Marrone blew it. And Patriots go on in the Super Bowl to lose to Doug Peterson and the Eagles, and it's been all downhill since.
I mean, losing at least 10 games in 10 of the last 11 years, it's been a lot of downhill.
That's bad.
And, I mean, we went down there whenever that was, and that stadium kind of sucks, and that downtown kind of sucks. I know that the Jacksonville area is nice, but not downtown. You kind of alluded to it. I think – my two teams I like to kind of bounce back this year are the Jags and the Vikings. And I think largely it's going to be getting rid of a toxic head coaching situation. And I don't want to compare Mike Zimmer, who's just kind of an old school hard ass, to whatever Urban Meyer was, because they were not comparable. But I mean, the situation was such a disaster. But is any of that bump from getting rid of Urban, like, has it already happened? Because they got rid of him with like 6 weeks left last year.
I think it could happen more. The problem I have with the theory is he picked too many bad players. So he brought in bad players and was part of drafting guys who might not be any good. So you're expecting a bounce back from one draft, one free agent year, from a place where players don't want to go because it's Jacksonville, and there's not a whole lot of history of winning within the last two decades. And so I don't know if the talent is there to have enough of that. Certainly there was a bump from getting rid of him last year, and the players hated the coach, and he was downright abusive, allegedly kicked the kicker in the leg during an exhibition game saying, make your kicks. But like there's a certain amount of like, yes, when a boss who you don't like goes out the door, you're better at doing your job. But I just don't know if there's enough talent there to win more than four or five games.
The biggest and quickest way to guarantee a big bump for the Jaguars will be for Trevor Lawrence to take that next step or his first step. 12 touchdowns, 17 picks last year. I know a lot of it, if not almost all of that, was because of Urban and the toxic situation. But is there any sort of rattling amongst those who know the team that maybe Trevor isn't the guy, or you just throw first year out the window?
I just look at Peyton Manning and look at how many picks he threw his first 2 years in the NFL and say, this is what happens, especially for a guy who was used to playing on such a talented team and going to a team that obviously if you're picked first overall, you're not very good. And so the tools around him, the players around him weren't as good. The offensive line was garbage. And it's, that's a slow improvement that, to actually protect him. As we saw with Joe Burrow, you finally protect a guy like that and you give him weapons. I'm not saying that Trevor Lawrence is going to take the Jaguars to the Super Bowl like Joe Burrow did with the Bengals, but if he's got more weapons at his disposal and has time to throw, I'm not necessarily worried about that. I also just think the evolution of a quarterback, most guys don't come into the league and don't throw interceptions. Like there's a learning curve there. And now with Doug Peterson, who knows how to work with the young quarterback, who he worked with Carson Wentz before the knee injury. And so I think he has an idea of what he's doing, and that will help Trevor Lawrence kind of get on that curve.
I'm going to take this a little bit of a different direction. You've obviously covered the Commanders as a kind of member of the media. You're also a Jags fan. Do you compare how do you compare kind of the fan bases? We talked a little bit about Urban Meyer and the toxic culture and the double digit wins in 10 of the last 11 years.
Double digit losses.
Obviously the Commanders have their own issues. How do you kind of compare the two franchises/fan bases as they deal with the team?
Well, I think the Jaguars, because there's so many less years of history, there's fewer fans. This is an expansion franchise that started in 1995. And yes, they did have a lot of that success early on of getting to AFC title games, the 14-2 season. They had the Mark Brunell, Tony Boselli years, but it wasn't like they won a championship. When we saw this, what happened in Washington with the Capitals and the Nats, like you win a championship, it energizes a fan base. You get close to winning it and you grow a certain generation. I went to the Jaguars Steelers playoff game during that same run I was talking about in early 2018. And like the Jaguars fans in Pittsburgh were incredible. Like Duval chants all over the streets. Like the hardcore fans are in and just like pained by everything. Like we see this with the Commanders over the years of the diehards who can't help themselves. And that's that group of fans. It's certainly smaller, but those fans still exist. The problem is you don't have that layer of people whose parents and grandparents were fans of the team that they grow up in it, because everyone already had a team. And so unless you're from Jacksonville or you're a nutcase like me, you're not a Jaguars fan. Like, there's no reason for someone to become a Jaguars fan unless you are from that area. Because it's not like they're winning enough that you're like that someone's just going to jump on the bandwagon. Like I've always said to people, if they ever win the Super Bowl, y'all are going to know I wasn't jumping on any bandwagon.
Sure.
But I just think there are fewer of those people over the years. So the apathy in the fan base and the reason why it doesn't sell out is because you just don't have those people who care that much or are willing to put the emotional investment in.
Hell, the Commanders have the fan base in the history, and they still don't sell out either. I know this. You've told me before. You're from Philly and went to college around here. How the hell are you a Jaguars fan?
Okay, so I'm glad your listeners are gonna be able to hear the story too. I was at a county fair in summer of 94. I'm 8 years old. And you know those ring toss games? They throw the rings on the 2 liter bottles. So I won.
Where are we at? South Jersey for this county fair?
This was Bucks County. This was Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And so the prize was NFL football helmets. And I mean, like, even at 8 years old, I knew every team logo, whatever they all look like. And there was a silver helmet with a jumping Jaguar logo on it. And I didn't recognize it. I asked the guy. He's like, oh, it's the expansion Jacksonville Jaguars. They start playing next season. So I got the helmet. I've had the helmet ever since, and I've been a fan ever since.
All right.
You didn't want to don the helmet for this podcast?
I have the helmet. I actually still have it.
Oh, wow. Got to get a picture of this, Pedro.
I'll screen grab the helmet.
This is the helmet. And the Jaguar car company sued them for the logo, and so they never wore this.
That is a sick piece of sports history that you have available.
I can't believe I still have this very prominently displayed.
How much does Brandon Scherff help Lawrence?
A big deal if it works with the rest of the offensive line. I mean, Andrew Norwell, who's now with the Commanders, was there. Brandon Linder, the longtime center, retired. Cam Robinson back at left tackle, who may or may not be any good. Juwan Taylor, another high draft pick out of Florida, right tackle. May or may not be any good. It helps in that it solidifies that position. But I think it actually probably helps James Robinson and Travis Etienne in the running game more in that Brandon Scherff's going to be able to run block. And if that the running game is better, by extension, it's going to help. It's going to help Trevor Lawrence.
My last
Walker going one. Sorry, Pete.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you team Walker or team Hutchinson? So kind of the same thing of where JP was going.
I thought Hutchinson was the best player in the draft, but I'm not an expert in these sort of things like you guys are, or our colleague Ben Standing, of kind of having an idea of what the upside of Walker versus a Hutchinson is. The story of Hutchinson to Detroit is a good one. I think Hutchinson was probably a better player, and the question now becomes, is Trent Baalke and this front office and Doug Peterson know what the hell they're doing? Because that's still a kind of jury's out situation beyond Trevor Lawrence, who was a gimme pick. They had all these needs, and they take a running back with the extra first round pick they got last year from the Jalen Ramsey trade. And so is it just kind of bad asset management when you have all these high draft picks and you don't get impact players?
Is this offense going to move this year? If Travis Etienne comes back, does that change things for this team on the ground, especially with Scherff and adding to the offensive line and being able to actually run the ball effectively?
It should, and I see Etienne in a J.D. McKissic sort of role there too, in that if James Robinson is your workhorse running back and could carry the ball 25, 30 times, which he should, and Urban Meyer kept benching him every time he put the ball on the ground last year, Etienne gives you the kind of mix and match sort of like you can use him in an Antonio Gibson sort of role of he can catch the ball, he can run, he can do a lot of things. He's another talented player adding to an offense that doesn't have a lot of talent.
Last one before caps. Chances the Jags win week one at FedEx Field?
Low. I mean, possible because it's football and who knows what could happen by then in terms of injuries and those sort of things. But I don't think the Jaguars have many more than four or five wins on their schedule. And I don't think this is one of them.
Okay. We've done the funeral. I'm trying to look ahead. How can the Caps get back to winning playoff series?
Well, can you turn back time? Like, can you make Alex Ovechkin and Nick Backstrom and TJ Oshie younger?
I think
I don't think so.
Cher's been trying that for some time, and she's still just singing the same song.
Yeah, so Brian McClellan isn't Cher, but
you are.
I well, here the first answer is they need a goalie. Like the, not that goaltending was the reason they lost the series, but there is the reason they lost game six of that series. I guess Samsonov was not good in that game. He was not good on the Giroux goal specifically, probably another couple that he would have liked to have back. And I think getting a veteran goaltender in here and whatever that costs money and asset wise is the first order of business to not have this question of two inexperienced goalies in their mid 20s. Who's going to start? You want the no doubt, this is our guy. This is someone who's done it before. A Jonathan Quick, Darcy Kemper, who's in Colorado now, John Gibson in Anaheim. Somebody like that. Cam Talbot is in Minnesota. Someone who's a proven goaltender. You're not going to get the star like Vasilevsky, Shesterkin, that kind of caliber. But they need – the first step is get a goaltender and then figure out what the heck's going on with Nick Backstrom's health. And kind of whether he's going to play again, because that's a serious question at this point. And kind of where do you use, if you have extra salary cap space, how do you get a little younger? Because you can't make your old guys younger, but you can bring in youth. Connor McMichael will be there. But for me, it starts from the net out, and then there's a whole lot of decisions to be made from there.
Is Backstrom the most likely sort of stalwart to not be with this team next year by injury or by somehow moving him? Or is there somebody else more likely to be sent away as they try to shake things up?
Yeah, I mean, he's not going anywhere unless he just can't play anymore. And the hip injury, he wants to play. He really like, but he just wasn't himself. We watched him and he couldn't move half the time. And he may have surgery and maybe a long rehab situation. But if he can get back to being himself and plays, that's a good thing. And then maybe Lars Eller's the guy who's out of here. But I think the Capitals and Brian McClellan and Pierre Laviolette said this, they want to find a space at center for Connor McMichael, who's 21 years old and is part of the future of this team and ready to kind of expand his role into a full-time player. Other than that, like most of these guys are on, under long-term contracts. You're not going to move. TJ Oshie's not going anywhere. Nicholas Backstrom, as long as he can play hockey, he's not going anywhere. Ovechkin, Carlson, Orlov. Orlov only has 1 year left on his deal, but there's not a whole lot of blowing up that can be done out of this group.
I mean, you guys are all asking kind of around the question. Can this crew win a cup again? Is the window closed?
The window's not closed. I think Pittsburgh's closer to the window being closed. You ask me this a year from now, and we may have a different answer based on Nick Backstrom's health and those sort of things, but this team can still get to the playoffs. And if you get to the playoffs, we've seen this in hockey, you just need things to go right. Things didn't go right for them this time. They blew some leads. They got one bad goaltending game. Alex Ovechkin maybe wasn't 100%. You started seeing little cracks here and there, which is going to happen. But if they had played the Rangers, maybe you get the same sort of play out of your series and you get to the second round. And then you play a Carolina team that's banged up and you could start talking your way into they make a run and then you face another team that's a really good matchup. Yeah, there's a way for this team to win the Stanley Cup. The question is, how many more years do they have the opportunity to do it? It's at least one more. And it might be two more. And I think that Alex Ovechkin contract matches up to that, because if he is still an elite player at 37 years old next year, yes, this team can win a Stanley Cup.
What, when, and where was your last Wawa order?
My last Wawa order was, it must have been a turkey sandwich on a drive back from Philly, I think. No, I did a mobile order in Columbia Heights for a turkey sandwich 2 weeks ago.
They deliver it?
No, I was dog sitting for a friend down there, and it was maybe a 2-block walk from their place. So I did the mobile order and got the sandwich there.
2 weeks is like kind of a long time for you to be.
Yeah, are you starting to itch?
Well, when I'm done with this, believe it or not, on the way to Baltimore to do the Preakness draw, I'm going to Wawa. So you called me right before a Wawa trip.
Well, let's not hold you up. I know how much Wawa means to you and don't want to slow you down. Did you have something else, Pete?
Just why not real quick talk about the damn book you're about to write, because there's one person on the Zoom who's about to write a book and it's not the three guys these listeners are used to hearing from.
Yeah, the book comes out in October. I wrote it. It's 72,000 words is done. Knock on wood. It's called Odd Man In. Emergency backup goalies and the wildest one-day job in sports. And the Capitals had, and this has happened a handful of times in the NHL, where a Zamboni driver, an accountant, a life insurance salesman, a goalie equipment manager came into an NHL game. It's the weirdest thing. It would never happen in any other sport. And so I talked to a bunch of guys, wrote a book, comes out on October 25th.
I love that. It's so cool. Mitch, If Wino wrote 72,000 words about backup goalies, how many blogs would Pete need to write to get to 72,000? Is that 100,000 blogs, you think?
What is it, 72,000? Pete writes 300-word blogs. So what does that get us to? 200,000 blogs?
I legit don't know how to do that math.
No, it's like 250.
By 300?
250 blogs or something like that?
240, yeah.
240? Yeah.
Why not? Tell everybody your Twitter or whatever you want to promote besides your book.
And Swino Horses.
Swino and Swino Horses, because it's Preakness Week.
I love Swino Horses. It's one of my favorite bits going. Thank you, dude. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Wino.
Thanks, bud.
We're going to do a kind of in-depth look at each one of the Panthers' opponents this coming year.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman, Kia of Alexandria. Let's ride together.